Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level.
And now, America's number one show on pop culture and politics. This is the Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth. A great day to ponder a great question. How did a guy with no military experience, a small-time lawyer mostly, and somebody who was a politician with a mixed record of success, become literally one of the greatest war leaders in all of human history? We're talking, of course, about Abraham Lincoln, and we ponder the mysteries and miracles of Lincoln's life in this special broadcast, The Real Lincoln. And how important a war leader was Abraham Lincoln? There's a fascinating book edited by the great David Donald, one of the greatest Lincoln biographers. It's called Why the North Won the Civil War. And T. Harry Williams, another fine historian, writes in there the military leadership of North and South. He writes, it remains to touch on the military leadership of the North and the South at the highest levels where strategy was determined, at the rival presidents and the command systems they headed. In supreme leadership, the Union was clearly superior. Lincoln was an abler and a stronger man than Davis. The Northern president illustrated perfectly the truth of von Clausewitz's dictum that a remarkable, superior mind and strength of character are the primary qualifications for a director of war. David Potter, a fine historian, writes about Jefferson Davis and Confederate defeat. He says Jefferson Davis, of course, who was the president of the Confederacy, failed in three important ways: in his relations with other Confederate leaders and with the people, in his fundamental concept of his job as president, and in his specific handling of his politico-military role as commander-in-chief. In every one of these respects, Lincoln offered a striking contrast and presented superlative qualities of leadership. How did he get to exercise those superlative qualities of leadership, given some of the political drawbacks that probably would have killed his career if he had been a politician in, oh, say, 2012, 13, 14, any time of the 21st century? For instance, there was the matter of Lincoln's appearance. Lincoln made jokes about being a homely man, but he really did strike people remarkably strongly that way. His law partner, William Herndon, described him as, his cheekbones were high, sharp, and prominent. His eyebrows cropped out like a huge rock on the brow of a hill. His long, sallow face was wrinkled. He also has scars and a mole, the kind of things that a political consultant today would say, well, you got to get that fixed, you got to get that taken care of. His private secretary, John Nicolay, who I wrote about in Shadow Presidents, wrote that Lincoln's features were too complicated to be captured accurately, even by the most gifted photographers or painters. Graphic art, he wrote, was powerless before a face that moved through a thousand delicate gradations of line and contour, light and shade, sparkle of the eye and curve of the lip, in the long gamut of expression from grave to gay, and back again, from the rollicking jollity of laughter to that faraway look. And that faraway look highlighted another problem Lincoln would have had as a contemporary politician. He was a gloomy guy. People were struck by his melancholy. In fact, there is a fascinating book written by Joshua Wolf Schenck that suggests that Lincoln, for most of his life, was clinically depressed and had serious episodes of depression, ranging up to suicide, and he considered suicide, and he wrote about it on three different occasions. And, for instance, when he first met his longtime friend Joshua Speed, who was one of his best friends, he said, when he met Lincoln, I looked up at him, and most people, given his great height, looked up at him. I looked up at him, and I thought then, as I think now, that I never saw so gloomy and melancholy a face in my life. And in one of the episodes of severe depression that Lincoln experienced, he wrote to a friend, If what I feel were equally distributed to the whole human family, there would not be one cheerful face on the earth. Whether I shall ever be better, I cannot tell. I awfully forebode I shall not. To remain as I am is impossible. I must die or be better, it appears to me. That's usually not the kind of temperament that you associate with a successful politician. And then there was also the problem of his marriage. Lincoln married Mary Todd. She was from a fine family in Kentucky. She was very well educated, very aristocratic. Her family had been one of the founding families of Lexington, Kentucky. And Mary Todd had been educated at the finest schools. She spoke fluent French. She was accustomed to privilege. Lincoln was never wealthy. And he and his wife always, always had tough issues between them. They clearly loved each other. He actually spent a lot of money buying her pearls from Tiffany's in New York City to celebrate his inauguration as president. But their backdoor neighbor back home in Springfield, whose name was James Gourley, wrote, "Whenever Mrs. L got the devil in her, Lincoln would pick up one of his children and walk off, would laugh at her. Pay no earthly attention to her when in that wild, furious condition. Other neighbors saw her chasing him out of the house with a broom and once with a butcher knife." Not the kind of stuff that the tabloids would have let go, in recent political times. How do you overcome these obstacles? What were the skills? What were the gifts? What were the advantages that Lincoln had that overcame the fact that, no, he was not an impressive-looking person, and yes, he did have mood problems, and yes, he had a troubled marriage, a troubled marriage. First of all, his biggest advantage was words. No one wrote speeches, English prose, more phenomenally, brilliantly than Abraham Lincoln. The ability that he had to move people, to inspire people with his words. I mentioned his lost speech at Bloomington at the very launching of the Republican Party in Illinois. And people were so moved, so overcome by what he had said, that they forgot to even take notes. That's why it's called the lost speech. We don't have it written down, and he didn't prepare a text. One eyewitness who was there at the Bloomington speech, where the Republican Party was inaugurated in May 29, 1856, wrote, "At this moment, he looked to me the handsomest man I had ever seen in my life." And then Herndon, his law partner, recalled, "His speech was full of fire and energy and force. It was logic. It was pathos. It was enthusiasm. It was justice, equity, truth, and right set alight by the divine fires of a soul maddened by the wrong of slavery, of course. It was hard, heavy, knotty, gnarly, backed with wrath." Not many politicians who can produce that kind of impact. And, of course, the important thing was that his words were far more important than his image because of the communication at the time. Lincoln knew that his words were powerful. He saw to it that his greatest speeches were printed up and circulated. His debates with Douglas were transcribed. They were a sensation. There were people who came literally from around the country to see these debates, sometimes all of them. And crowds of 20,000 people and upwards to 30,000 people who were gathered there, hearing people at midday in town squares, sometimes towns of 5,000-6,000 people that were jammed to many times their normal size. Those debates were recorded. Reporters came out and they wrote down those debates, what both of the contestants, what both of the candidates said. And they were amazed at Lincoln's words and his eloquence. For instance, at one point where Douglas was attacking Lincoln because he would abandon the principle that this was a white country and white people should have superior rights, Lincoln said, "As I would not be a slave, so I would not be a master." That is the issue which will continue in this country when these poor tongues of Judge Douglas and myself shall be silent. It is the eternal struggle between these two principles, right and wrong, throughout the world. The one is the common right of humanity, and the other is the divine right of kings. It is the same principle in whatever shape it develops itself. It is the same spirit that says, "You toil and work and earn bread, and I'll eat it." The reaction to Lincoln in the debates His knowledge of the subject is profound, his logic unanswerable, his style inimitable. Other than words, what brought Lincoln to greatness? More in this special program, The Real Lincoln.
Well, just when you thought it couldn't get any better, MyPillow is launching the MyPillow 2.0. Back when MyPillow was invented, it had everything you could want in a pillow. Now, nearly two decades later, they've discovered a new technology that makes MyPillow even better. The MyPillow 2.0 has the patented adjustable fill of the original MyPillow, and now with brand new fabric that is made with a temperature-regulating thread. The MyPillow 2.0 is the softest, smoothest, and coolest pillow you'll ever own. Say goodbye to tossing and turning and flipping your pillow over in the middle of the night, and more great news on the MyPillow 2.0, buy one, get one free with promo code MEDVED. MyPillow 2.0 with its temperature regulating technology is 100% made in the USA and comes with a 10-year warranty and a 60-day money-back guarantee. Just go to MyPillow.com and click on the radio podcast square to receive the MyPillow 2.0 buy one, get one free offer. Just when you thought MyPillow couldn't get any better, MyPillow 2.0 gives you the best pillow ever. Enter promo code MEDVED at MyPillow.com to get your MyPillow 2.0s today.
History repeats itself, and we're seeing that play out with inflation. When Jimmy Carter took office in the late 70s, gold sold for $140 an ounce. Can you imagine? By 1980, the price of gold topped out at $870 an ounce. Now, if today's market performs like it did when Carter was in office, the price of gold could skyrocket from $1,800 an ounce to $9,300 an ounce. This is Michael Medved for AmFed Coin and Bullion. Don't miss out on a great opportunity to purchase precious metals while the prices are still stable. If history repeats itself, we'll see a run on gold, silver, and platinum that will certainly drive up prices. Be smart. Buy now. At AmFed, you're dealing with specialists who provide you with personalized attention, honest information, and sound advice. You'll never be pressured into buying outrageously priced so-called collectible coins or anything that you don't need. 800-221-7694, 800-221-7694, AmericanFederal.com.
Do you need to get your hands on some extra money right now? Maybe $25,000 or more? If you're a homeowner, now is the perfect time to get cash out while homes in many neighborhoods like yours have gone up in value. You can use the money for anything. It's yours. You can buy an investment property, pay off higher interest debt, or make home improvements. If you need $25,000, $50,000, or more, now is the time. Home values are up, and so is your equity. We offer you a way to use it. No need to use your savings. Call New American Funding now and see how much cash out you can get. Call 800-721-2477. 800-721-2477. 800-721-2477. That's 800-721-2477. NMLS 6606. www.nmlsconsumeraccess.org. This is not an offer or commitment to lend. Subject to borrower and property qualifications. Not all borrowers will qualify. Terms and conditions apply. Equal housing opportunity.
What if people always acted the same way they do when they're driving their cars?
Good morning, Mrs. Blanchard. How may I help you?
I'd like to cash this check.
Sure.
I'll just get my pen.
Come
here
on, lady. Get a move on.
Goodness.
Where'd you learn to bank anyway?
Ooh.
Whoa. Don't you give me that look.
It sure wouldn't be a very friendly place.
What kind of candy do you want, sweetie?
This. No, this.
Pick something already. Come on, honey. We're holding people up. How about this kind?
No.
What is the matter with you people? If you're not going to do something, I am. Get out of my way.
Every day, drivers and their families all across the country are killed on the roadways because of road rage.
Wasn't it a beautiful wedding?
Oh, yes, and they made such a lovely couple.
Excuse me, is this the receiving line?
Yes, it is.
Hey, he cut in line.
I'm a friend of the bride. Do you know the group?
Hey, pal, you cut in line.
Buzz off.
Oh, yeah?
Hey, hit that nice man.
That'll teach you to cut in line, you jerk.
Stop the senselessness of road rage. It's time we all drive with the same courtesy we extend to people in the rest of our lives. A message from the AAA Foundation for Traffic Safety.
The music of Stephen Foster, the words written in response to Abraham Lincoln's call in July of 1862 for more volunteers. The words, "We are coming, Father Abraham, 300,000 more, from Mississippi's winding stream and from New England's shore. We leave our plows and workshops, our wives and children dear, with hearts too full for utterance, with but a silent tear. We dare not look behind us, but steadfastly before, we are coming, Father Abraham, 300,000 more, We are coming, coming our union to restore. We are coming, Father Abraham, with 300,000 more. As a war leader, Lincoln was able to inspire with words in the same way that Churchill inspired with words. The Gettysburg Address, of course, which has been described, I think, aptly as the most perfect prose poem ever written in the English language, stands as the best example of that. But you can look at letters, you can look at sort of ordinary state papers that Lincoln wrote that are so gorgeously expressed, where the words are so beautiful to say over, I frankly can't resist. For instance, his message to Congress, the annual message to Congress, the State of the Union address, in effect, it came in December 1st, 1862. And it's a very, very long speech, and a lot of it is about all of the stuff that Lincoln was very, very committed to doing, other than just winning the war, though that, of course, was his main focus. Lincoln was a remarkable leader, because even with all of this going on, he put forward visionary bills that created the Transcontinental Railroad, that created the modern fiscal system for the whole government, that provided for homesteading, the Homestead Act, and created the nation's land-grant universities. Now, all that was going on, and there's a lot of detail. His annual message to Congress is very long, and much of it is very boring. But there, toward the end, comes this passage. And I don't know of speechwriting that is better than this, by anyone, ever. Lincoln says, "Fellow citizens, we cannot escape history. We, of this Congress and this administration, will be remembered in spite of ourselves. No personal significance or insignificance can spare one or another of us. The fiery trial through which we pass will light us down in honor or dishonor to the latest generation. We, even we here, hold the power and bear the responsibility. The dogmas of the quiet past are inadequate to the stormy present. The occasion is piled high with difficulty, and we must rise with the occasion. As our case is new, so we must think anew and act anew. We must disenthrall ourselves, and then we will save our country." His words, his unmatched command of the language, played a profound role, of course, in saving the Union, defining the cause for which people sacrificed their lives in unprecedented numbers. But that didn't make Lincoln feel any more comfortable with his job as commander-in-chief of the greatest army, arguably, ever assembled on planet Earth. In fact, he once spoke to a friend of his, a member of Congress, Daniel Voorhees of Indiana, and he said, "Doesn't it seem strange to you that I should be here? Doesn't it strike you as queer that I, who couldn't cut the head off of a chicken and who was sick at the sight of blood, should be cast into the middle of a great war with blood flowing all about me?" It was peculiar, but when it came to mastering his role as commander-in-chief, Lincoln showed that remarkable combination that was shown by two different comments by his assistant secretary, John Hay, guy who later went on to be Secretary of State, famous novelist. John Hay, as a very young man, was working for Lincoln, and after Lincoln died, he said his was the greatest character since Christ. But he also wrote about, at rock bottom, Lincoln's intellectual arrogance. Lincoln knew he was smart. I mean, how could he not, with what he had achieved given his background? And he was completely determined to master the arts of literary strategy. And in fact, John Hay wrote, the president, this is in the toward the end of 1861, first year of the war, "The president is himself a man of great aptitude for military studies." And he observed that Lincoln was spending so much time at the War Department that many of the orders issuing from the War Department are actually penned by the hand of the president. In December of 61, John Nicolay, his other secretary, he only had two people on his entire staff. That was it. his cabinet, and then the two secretaries. John Nicolay observed that Lincoln gave himself night and day to the study of the military situation. He read a large number of strategical works. He pored over the reports from the various departments and districts of the field of war. He held long conferences with eminent generals and admirals and astonished them by the extent of his special knowledge. Increasingly, he piled up military books on the long cabinet table in his office. William Howard Russell, who was a war correspondent, became aware of Lincoln's trips to the Library of Congress. The poor president, he wrote, he is to be pitied, trying with all his might to understand strategy, naval warfare, big guns, the movement of troops, military maps, reconnaissances, occupations, interior and exterior lines, and all the technical details of the art of slaying. He runs from one house to another, armed with plans, papers, reports, recommendations, sometimes good-humored, never angry, occasionally dejected. That was Lincoln. And what allowed him to apply that mastery so effectively was his lifetime in politics. Again, to understand how deeply involved he was with that, his law partner, Billy Herndon, wrote, "It was in the world of politics that he lived. Politics were his life, newspapers his food, and his great ambition his mode of power. Anyone who thinks Lincoln calmly gathered his robes about him, waiting for the people to call him, has a very erroneous knowledge of Lincoln. He was always calculating and planning ahead. His ambition was a little engine that knew no rest." And he applied those political skills to winning the war. David Vandrilli wrote in his fine book, The Rise to Greatness, "In the midst of the greatest crisis the nation had ever faced, Lincoln spent dozens of hours each week painstakingly distributing the rapidly growing number of federal jobs at his disposal." He quotes Richard Henry Dana, the famous author and attorney, saying, "He seems to me to be fonder of patronage and personnel questions than of the weightier matters of empire." Secretary of the Navy, Gideon Welles, spoke of Lincoln that never under any administration were greater care and deliberation required in dispensing presidential favors. For Lincoln was shoring up a demoralized government and a crumbling union. What political skills allowed him to succeed so unexpectedly and magnificently in that endeavor? We will get to that and much more in this special broadcast, The Real Lincoln.
Whatever the controversies, whatever the surprises in the world around us at the moment, it's important to get some perspective, and no better source of perspective than the history of this great country. At MedVetHistoryStore.com, check out some of the titles we have on offer about the Constitution, about the origins of our tax system, about the history of third parties. Enrich your understanding and appreciation with CDs and MP3 downloads at MedVetHistoryStore.com.
Do you ever get the feeling that the world is being held together with duct tape? Every day we're thrown some new meaningless drama in the fake news to distract us from the reality we're all about to face. Between the government trying to print their way out of debt, military conflicts, the disintegration of our most trusted institutions, and a looming food shortage, preparedness is no longer a choice. It's a necessity. You can trust My Patriot Supply. Our emergency food kits come packed with tasty meals, averaging over 2,000 calories per day. Get at least one kit for each person in your family. Self-reliance is the only alternative to government food lines. Time is running out. Become ungovernable. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and save on dozens of different emergency food kits while you can. These kits are in stock, ship fast, and arrive in unmarked boxes for your privacy. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com before the next crisis strikes. MyPatriotSupply.com.
USA News Update. EPA Chief Michael Regan says Norfolk Southern could have responded more aggressively to the train derailment in East Palestine, Ohio. Regan met with residents of the small eastern Ohio town Tuesday.
I see them. I hear them. I'm not second-guessing their experiences.
Many of the residents saying they are now experiencing adverse health effects. Regan says tests of the water and air show it's not contaminated. The Center for Disease Control is recommending that any adult at risk should get the monkeypox vaccine now in case of future outbreaks. weeks. Those who are prone to contracting the virus should get the two-shot dose of that vaccine. China's President Xi is planning to visit Moscow this summer, fueling concerns by the U.S. that China is providing help to Russia in its war with Ukraine. Russian President Vladimir Putin made that announcement about the summer summit during a meeting with China's top diplomat. He said relations between the two countries are reaching new frontiers. John Schaefer, USA News.
Anytime, any place, anywhere. Radio remains the most intimate of all forms of media. At home, at work, in the car, on smartphones. Over 90% of consumers still listen to radio every week. That makes choosing radio as a place to advertise your business one of the best decisions you can make. Email advertise@gcnlive.com and partner up with an experienced GCN representative. Advertise@gcnlive.com. Easy, affordable, effective.
Are you afraid to go to the mailbox because of letter after letter from the IRS? Are they stacking on more and more penalties and interest? By now, you know the problem won't go away on its own. Don't let the IRS chase you to your grave with penalties and interest and liens and levies. You need real help now. I'm Dan Pilla. I wrote the book on tax debt settlement, and I help thousands of people solve tax problems they thought couldn't be solved. I can help you too. Call 800-34-NO-TAX or go to my website, danpilla.com. That's danpilla.com. Danpilla.com.
No matter how large or small your digging project may be, no matter how urban or rural, you must always call 811 before any digging project. 811 is our national one-call number, alerting your local utility companies to come out and mark any lines they have near your dig site. So before you do this or this, make sure you do this. For digging projects big or small, make the call to 811, brought to you by Common Ground Alliance.
Cancer categorizes over 100 diseases. Though we do not diagnose, treat, or cure cancer, GCN team is offering the Clemson University study where there was up to a 95% reduction in cancerous cells when exposed to a plant-derived mineral supplement. If you or a loved one are searching for answers to this horrifying disease, come to GCNteam.com or call 877-878-4203. We'll email you a copy for free. That's 877-878-4203.
Now we'll rally round because boys rally in our might, singing the holy cause of free men. We will battle for our union, the sacred cause of right, singing the holy cause of free men. For Lincoln and Johnson, huzzah, boys, huzzah, down with rebellion, on with the war.
Down with rebellion and on with the war. This campaign song for Lincoln and his new running mate, Andrew Johnson, in 1864, actually indicates the obsession that Lincoln had with actually winning re-election. It wasn't simply because it was a matter of pride with him, though he acknowledged that pride was part of it. It was his knowledge that through politics he could achieve his great aims, which were saving the Union, and yes, freeing the slaves. Even though it was wildly controversial that he was so slow about freeing the slaves, Lincoln was a political being. He was someone who believed in the art of the possible. He was nominated for president, the surprise nominee, nominated in 1860 by the Republican Party, because the leading candidate, William Henry Seward, was considered by some of the more moderate Republicans, some of the more moderate free soil people, particularly in Indiana and Pennsylvania and Illinois, states which Democrats usually won and which the Republicans needed to win the election. Seward would have been less palatable than Lincoln. Lincoln got the nominee and then performed far better than anyone expected in the election. It wasn't just that the Democrats were divided that allowed Lincoln to win. It's commonly believed that that's what handed him victory. Actually, in the majority of electoral votes, all the electoral votes he needed, Lincoln won a literal majority. In other words, if you take all the three candidates who were running against him combined, they had fewer votes than Lincoln. He did well because he was a practicing politician. Richard Hofstadter, who was the great political science of the previous scientist of the previous generation at Columbia University, wrote, "The clue to much that is vital in Lincoln's thought and character lies in the fact that he was thoroughly and completely the politician, by preference and by training.
It is difficult to think of any man of comparable stature whose life was so fully absorbed into his political being. Lincoln plunged into politics almost at the beginning of his adult life and was never occupied in any other career, except for a brief period when an unfavorable turn in his political situation forced him back to his law practice. His life was one of caucuses and conventions, party circulars and speeches, requests, recommendations, stratagems, schemes, and ambitions. Yes, it was. And as a matter of fact, he was obsessed with winning that re-election. Though very early on in the struggle to win that re-election, it looked like he would be doomed. And he kept telling people that it looks as if we should lose and we should prepare. However, he was involved in all the details of behind-the-scenes management. His new Secretary of the Treasury, William Pitt Fessenden, said, "The president is too busy looking after the election to think of anything else." He was running against a general who had always been a Democrat and had never much liked or respected Lincoln, but who had been indispensable, Lincoln thought, at the beginning of the war, George B. McClellan. The Democrats had nominated McClellan on a peace platform, basically, which would have spoiled the whole war. What Lincoln did is he actually wrote a note and sealed it and then told his cabinet about it. He wanted the note to only be open in the event that he did lose. But the note laid out a scheme by which they could still win the war in the period of time between when McClellan would win the election and actually take power. Because they believed that once McClellan took power, given the peace at any price platform of the Democrats, the war would have to come to an end. All of this had to do with Lincoln's fatalism. He was very unapologetic about the basis for his concern about the election. He said, "I confess that I desire to be reelected. God knows I do not want the labor and responsibility of the office for another 4 years, but I have the common pride of humanity to wish my past 4 years administration endorsed. I honestly believe," he wrote, "that I can better serve the nation in its need and peril than any new man could possibly do." Nevertheless, he was trapped between the peace Democrats who wanted to recognize the Confederacy and an immediate end to the war, and on the other side, abolitionists and so-called radical Republicans who thought Lincoln was an equivocating politician. They recognized he had issued the Emancipation Proclamation, but he hadn't even freed the slaves in the 4 slave states that had remained as part of the Union. And Wendell Phillips, who was one of those radical Republicans and abolitionists, said, "I would cut off both hands before doing anything to aid Abraham Lincoln's election." What did Wendell Phillips want? They wanted a third-party candidate, John C. Fremont, previous Republican nominee, a general that Lincoln had fired who was planning to run as a third-party candidate that would completely destroy any chance that Lincoln could win re-election. So what did Lincoln do about that? We'll tell you. It's not pretty, but it's smart. In this special broadcast, The Real Lincoln.
This is Michael Medved at michaelmedved.com for Town Hall. New poll results show an alarming level of religious distrust aimed at evangelicals and help to explain overwhelming support for President Trump from born-again Christian believers. The Wall Street Journal NBC survey showed only 54% of Americans felt comfortable voting for a presidential candidate who is an evangelical Christian. Since 25% of the electorate identifies themselves as evangelical, this means that a heavy majority of the non-evangelical population expressed discomfort over backing any born-again Christian. What's notable is that far more than two-thirds express their readiness to back a gay candidate. The unexpected level of undeserved discomfort regarding committed Christian citizens serves to explain why so many evangelicals see President Trump as an indispensable defender of their liberties, even though he's not personally religious. Given widespread media-fomented hostility to the religiously committed, many believers will eagerly back a secular candidate who nonetheless provides strong support on issues like religious liberty, defending the unborn, traditional marriage, and more. I'm Michael Medved.
The Lincoln and Johnson Huzzah, boys huzzah, down with rebellion, on with the war, as we rally round the cause, boys rally in our might, singing the holy cause of free men, then rally wide awake, we will ride once again, singing the holy cause of free men.
The campaign main song for Lincoln and his running mate Andrew Johnson, adopted, of course, from the very popular Union song "Rally Round the Flag, Boys." It really was about as crucial an election as has ever occurred in the United States of America, because the war would have had a different outcome if McClellan had won. As a matter of fact, Lincoln said in the summer of 1864, facing re-election, "Nothing but the most resolute and decided action on the part of the government and its friends can save the country from falling into hostile hands." And then he said at the same time to a friend, "You think I don't know I am going to be beaten? But I do. And unless some great change takes place, badly beaten." And then August 23rd, he had gotten letters about how he was being contested for the Republican nomination, even. And there were all kinds of rebellions and the problem of John C. Fremont, former Republican presidential nominee who had almost beaten Buchanan in 1856. This general, this national hero, was going to run as a third-party candidate, taking votes away from Lincoln and giving the election to McClellan and to the Party of Surrender. And Lincoln wrote, "This morning, as for some days past, it seems exceedingly probable this administration will not be reelected. Then it will be my duty to so cooperate with the president-elect as to save the Union. Between the election and the inauguration, as he will have secured his election on such ground that he cannot possibly save it afterward." So what buoyed Lincoln and allowed him to win the election? I actually spoke about this with President George W. Bush. On one of the occasions, I had the opportunity to meet him in the White House. And he said that he was trying to follow Lincoln's example. Lincoln knew that he would be okay and could win re-election if he kept the faith of the troops in the field, of the military, and of religion. And for Lincoln, the support from religious Americans was phenomenal.
You're listening to a special history program, The Real Lincoln, on The Michael Medved Show.
Okay, it's winter time, and that shouldn't stop you from going outdoors and enjoying yourself and getting some exercise. Relief Factor can help with that cause. Relief Factor is natural. It consists of fish oil and turmeric primarily, and other ingredients that have been tested and shown to be remarkably effective. A Relief Factor can make you feel better and give you an opportunity to enjoy all kinds of aspects of an active life that you may have been prevented from enjoying in the past. Go to michaelmedved.com, click on the banner. There's a special price available for what is called a quick start with Relief Factor. You take these tablets, which are entirely natural, no chemicals, no preservatives of any kind. This is a wonderful product that we heartily endorse. Go to michaelmedved.com, look for the banner for Relief Factor. Some of America's most important principles, like freedom of conscience, speech, rule of law, sanctity and dignity of human life, the family, and economic freedom, are under contemporary assault. It's more important than ever to teach our nation's traditional values and timeless principles. Now, these sometimes forgotten values must be remembered and communicated, and the Institute for Faith and Freedom at Grove City College exists to accomplish just that. The Institute promotes these principles to the next generation of leaders on campus and across the country. Go to the website faithandfreedom.com and you'll find online courses on Ronald Reagan and James Madison, and above all, a vigorous defense of Western civilization and its highest values. Advocating for these timeless principles is why Grove City College continues to be a beacon in higher education. Go to faithandfreedom.com.
Stop aging now. Restore those joints. Boost your strength. Because it's official. NutraMedical has released the most exciting, powerful anti-aging supplement on the market. Dr. Bill Deagle's Red Deer Velvet DR has been approved by the U.S. Patent Office. Imagine stem cell rejuvenation all in one capsule without huge expense. Dr. Bill MD discovered that as an unborn baby grows in the mother's womb, he or she does not deteriorate or physically age. Red Deer Velvet DR, like the uterus, provides 300 biomolecules and 6 hormones protected in one special DR capsule that delivers lipid packages directly into your circulation. This patented technology bypasses the stomach and is released into the small bowel unaltered by digestive enzymes and stomach acid. Remember, Red Deer Velvet DR. Improve endurance, stimulate your immune system, increase learning ability, and even improve sexual libido with Red Deer Velvet DR. Click NutriMedical.com. That's NutriMedical.com. Or call toll-free 888-212-8871 and get on the road to a newer, rejuvenated, happier you.
I had no idea it would destroy my life, but before it happened, I had a successful business in Austin, Texas. Everyone laughed at me when I shut that business down, but I could not ignore the wake-up call. I was volunteering on a project to get locally grown food into a school. That project was a complete failure, and I discovered that there were few local farmers. There's only 4 days' worth of food in the grocery stores, and everything comes 1,500 miles via a just-in-time trucking system. I lost friends and family who told me I was crazy to worry about that, but I kept at it. I'm Marjorie Wildcraft. Those of us who know what's going on in the world know you need to become self-reliant before the dollar collapses. I've created a free webinar at gcnfood.com. I can show you, like I've shown hundreds of thousands of people, how to grow lots of food, even if you have no experience, you're older, or you're out of shape. Do it now, before the stores are boarded up and food is not available at any price. Go to GCNfood.com. GCNfood.com.
You're listening to a special history program, The Real Lincoln, on The Michael Medved Show.
For Lincoln, the support from religious Americans was phenomenal. David Donald, in his fine biography of Lincoln, writes, "The support the president received from Protestant religious groups was overwhelming. He had made a point of consulting religious leaders and of praising their contribution to the war effort. In May, when a delegation from the Methodist Episcopal Church pointed out the denomination's record for loyalty and support of the administration, he replied, 'God bless the Methodist Church, bless all the churches, and blessed be God, who in this our great trial giveth us the churches.' The same month, he offered thanks to the American Baptist Home Mission Society for the effective and almost unanimous support which the Christian communities are so zealously giving to the country and to liberty." And as a matter of fact, when the Methodist Bishop Gilbert Haven announced the church's duty of the hour was to, quote, "march to the ballot box an army of Christ with the banners of the cross and deposit as she can a million of votes for her true representative," meaning Lincoln, "and she will give the last blow to the reeling fiend," meaning the Confederacy. The Christian Advocate and Journal observed, "There probably never was an election in all our history into which the religion element entered so largely, and nearly all on one side." Lincoln, ironically, was not personally a church-going man, never was. In fact, it was an issue that was used against him when he ran for and got elected to his one term in Congress. But he became, particularly with the pressures of the war, deeply and increasingly religious and fatalistic. He kept a copy of the Bible on his desk, and he read through it. He knew much of the Bible by heart. In fact, he knew it extraordinarily well. There's an amazing story where he was told about the Rump Convention that had nominated Fremont, who was going to be his rival. And it was not a very impressive convention. There are a lot of losers there, like many third and fourth and fifth party conventions often are. And Lincoln was amused, and a friend gave him a detailed report of the convention and the small number of delegates who showed up, about 400. Lincoln then picked up the Bible on his desk, and he immediately turned to a passage from 1 Samuel, quote, "And everyone that was in distress, and everyone that was in debt, and everyone that was discontented, gathered themselves unto him, and he became a captain over them, and there were with him about 400 men." Later, Lincoln sent Simon Cameron, who was one of the sleaziest politicians of the era, a real Pennsylvania operator, over to Fremont and assured Fremont that Lincoln would fire the most conservative member of the cabinet that a lot of the radicals didn't like, and basically made promises, and Fremont withdrew. And that enabled Lincoln to get the nomination. But he was deeply involved with every detail of trying to arrange the election. Part of that coexisted with Lincoln with a very, very deep sense of fatalism. One of the points that he is famous for having made is he said, "I claim not to have controlled events, but confess plainly that events have controlled me. Now, at the end of 3 year struggle, the nation's condition is not what either party or any man devised or expected. God alone can claim it." And even though he was not a churchgoer, one evening during 1864, when things were looking terrible for his reelection, his old friend Joshua Speed came to see him, one of the first people he had known well in New Salem. And Speed saw him in the White House sitting there reading the Bible. And Speed said to him, "I am glad to see you so profitably engaged." "Yes," the president said, "I am profitably engaged." "Well," said his visitor, "if you have recovered from your skepticism, I am sorry to say that I have not." Both of them were not conventional believers. And then Lincoln looked him square in the eyes and he said, "You are wrong, Speed. Take all of this book, upon reason that you can, and the balance, take on faith, and you will live and die a happier and better man." Later, he had come to feel, he told a delegation of Baltimore African Americans who presented him with a magnificently bound Bible in appreciation of his work to end slavery. Lincoln said, "This great book is the best gift God has given to man." The fatalism, the patience, the idea that, yes, he could influence events, but he could not control them. Part of what made Lincoln so uniquely great and so uniquely effective as a leader of a titanic, unimaginably serious conflict. "The purposes of the Almighty are perfect and must prevail," he said, "though we erring mortals may fail to accurately perceive them in advance."
Looking for a family gift that will have meaning and purpose for generations? Isn't it time your family's history was captured in book form? It's the most amazing gift you can give your parents or other loved ones. So often when parents pass away, their stories depart with them. Now my friend, New York Times bestselling author Michael Levin and his ghostwriting team can capture your family's story in a memoir that will educate and delight family members for generations to come. Don't let your family story disappear. Michael and his team will plan the book, interview loved ones, do appropriate research, write and publish the book for you. He and his team are responsible for over 700 books over the last 26 years. Isn't your family story important enough to capture in print? For information, visit michaelmedved.com and click on the banner for Writing Help. That's Writing Help at michaelmedved.com.
You're listening to a special history program, The Real Lincoln, on the Michael Medved Show.
And yes, Lincoln inspired the people of his own era, but he also transcended the time in which he lived in so many strange and truly remarkable ways. For instance, he may have been, according to the historian Paul Johnson, I think he's right, the first American who ever referred to Indians as Native Americans. Yeah, he did. He was a great defender of immigrant rights and was very pro-immigration. It's one of the reasons he hated the Know-Nothing Party that broke away from the Whig Party that was anti-immigrant. And he said to those who protested about German immigrants in particular, "Who are the Native Americans? Do they not wear the breech clout and carry the tomahawk? We push them from their homes and now turn on others not fortunate enough to come over so early as we or our forefathers." And then Lincoln, by about 20 years, when he was running for the state legislature for the second time, was the first American working politician to talk about giving votes to women. He issued his manifesto. He said, "I go for all sharing the privileges of government who assist in sharing its burdens. Consequently, I go for admitting all whites to the right of suffrage who pay taxes or bear arms, by no means excluding females." This is remarkable stuff. for 90 years before women actually got the right to vote. And concerning his racial attitudes, yes, he was a supporter of colonization, the crazy idea that freed slaves should be sent back to Africa, or he even had the idea at one point that they should have a colony in Central America. His attitudes were something very different. Frederick Douglass tells the story. He became the first African-American to be invited to a presidential inauguration. He was basically thrown out by mistake because he was black. He was a freed slave himself, great abolitionist, of the White House. And then Lincoln saw him, and he saw him being hustled out by the guards, and he shouted out, "Here comes my friend Douglass. I am glad to see you. I saw you in the crowd today listening to my inaugural address. How did you like it?" When Douglass briefly replied positively, "I liked it very much. This is the inaugural in 1865. Then Lincoln said, "There is no man in the country whose opinion I value more than yours." Lincoln, of course, was assassinated 5 weeks later, and Douglass wrote years later after that, "In all my interviews with Mr. Lincoln, I was impressed with his entire freedom from popular prejudice against the colored race," so wrote the former slave. "He was the first great man that I talked with in the U.S. freely, who in no single instance reminded me of the difference between himself and myself, of the difference of color. And I thought that all the more remarkable because he came from a state where there were black laws, where prejudice flourished. But Lincoln did free the slaves shortly before his death through constitutional amendment, if not through the Emancipation Proclamation. He did save the Union, and he gave our nation a new birth of freedom. May we have that same new birth of freedom by recalling his story, the greatest story of this greatest nation on God's green earth."
This is Michael Medved at MichaelMedved.com for Town Hall. New poll results show an alarming level of religious distrust aimed at evangelicals and help to explain overwhelming support for President Trump from born-again Christian believers. The Wall Street Journal NBC survey showed only 54% of Americans felt comfortable voting for a presidential candidate who is an evangelical Christian. Since 25% of the electorate identifies themselves as evangelical, this means that a heavy majority of the non-evangelical population expressed discomfort over backing any born-again Christian. What's notable is that far more than two-thirds expressed their readiness to back a gay candidate. The unexpected level of undeserved discomfort regarding committed Christian citizens serves to explain why so many evangelicals see President Trump as an indispensable defender of their liberties, even though he's not personally religious. Given widespread media-fomented hostility to the religiously committed, many believers will eagerly back a secular candidate who nonetheless provides strong support on issues like religious liberty, defending the unborn, traditional marriage, and more.
Hi, Fred Dwyer here. If you suffer from a serious chronic illness, heartburn, poor sleep, fatigue, brain fog, you need Balance 7. Balance 7 water improves the acid-alkaline balance in the body. The right pH helps unlock the immune system. It also allows for better hydration and nourishment during times of medication and stress. Balance 7 works. I know. I use it every day. Now you can try it free. Balance 7 is offering chronic illness sufferers a free gallon of Balance 7 water for the first 100 callers. That's an $87 value free. So call 800-793-9039 and mention my name, Fred. The first 100 callers suffering with a chronic illness get a free gallon of Balance 7 water. So call 800-793-9039, code word Fred, or visit balance7.com. That's balance, the number 7.com. 800-793-9039, code word Fred.
No other network provides the level of customer service we do. When it comes to radio advertising, we are your one-stop shop. And no matter how big or small your business is, we can help. Email us at advertise@gcnlive.com and an experienced advertising executive will help you take the first step towards driving more customers to your business or website. Advertise@gcnlive.com. Easy, affordable, effective.
As Dr. Wallach says, we all have nutrient deficiencies in our diets and must supplement with 90 essential nutrients in proper balances. At no cost or obligation, get a personal certified holistic health coach to help you develop a supplement program based on Dr. Wallach's recommendations. Call Linda at 833-VITAL-90. That number to call is 833-848-2590. That's 833-VITAL-90.